Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Franklin County's first settlement of Franklinton, that's a neighborhood immediately west of downtown, just over the Scioto River, is getting a partial makeover. Later this year, an Indiana developer will break ground on 1,700 apartments, 150 hotel rooms, and nearly a million square feet of office and retail space. The project will link COSI and the new Veterans Memorial, now under construction immediately west of the river. And on its face, it's all good. We're talking about the challenges of gentrification, though, as yet another Columbus neighborhood is fixed up. Where such development occurs, hardship often follows, for whom the rent, the rents becomes unaffordable. Joining us is Urban Issues and Columbus Neighborhoods reporter for the Columbus Dispatch, Mark Ferencik. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Ann.
Why the investment in Franklinton? Just give us a little thumbnail about why that's the hot place and why this now.
As you know, the city has invested this private sector has invested a lot of money in the riverfront in the Scioto River. So we have a park system there. Many people are using it. Franklinton is, or at least this part of Franklinton that's going to be developed at the beginning, is right across the river from downtown. You have wonderful views of the skyline. A lot of people are looking at that area east of the railroad tracks, east of the viaduct there, as almost an extension of downtown. So there is actually been there's a lot of vacant property in that part of Franklinton. And developers, as downtown has developed, see it as the next step development, because they feel that there's going to be a demand there because of the proximity to downtown and some of the areas that are developing around downtown.
Yeah, I mean, in some ways, you wonder why it took so long.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, exactly. It seems to be an obvious choice, but it's like the rest of the country. More and more people are attracted to downtown living, to urban living, but that's taken some time. So its proximity to downtown obviously is a benefit. But Franklinton had a perception, or there's a perception among some people, that's dangerous. That it was certainly there are blighted areas in Franklinton farther west. So how to get people attracted to Franklinton? And again, it's because it's close to downtown. They're building a new Veterans Memorial there. Mm-hmm. COSI is there. A number of businesses have sprouted up there. There's, of course, is the 400 West Rich Artist Colony there. So all of these things have happened slowly but surely. And people are now interested in developing there. Kaufman Development is building on West Broad Street, their multi-use development as well. So there are a lot of reasons why it's finally happening. The recession, obviously, 10 years ago had something to do with slowing down development process, yeah. But now is the right time.
You know, we're going to talk to the city in a little while, but just from where you sit as a journalist covering this, how much has the city been involved in the developing and planning for Franklinton, and what are their concerns?
Well, they certainly have been, you know, they put together the East Franklinton plan a number of years ago. There are a number of things that they're doing as far as infrastructure, too. I'm doing a story for later this week on they're planning a system of trails in Franklinton, too, which includes a trail along the viaduct, abandoned railroad line, near the 400 West Rich Colony, where people get a great view of downtown. That would be another attraction for residents for the area. So they've taken a number of steps to make it more attractive. Obviously, this the situation with Buckingham, that's the Indianapolis company that's going to be developing the site just around COSI. They were chosen by the Columbus Downtown Development Corporation to do that. It's going to be a 10-year build-out. And it's obviously market forces are going to be work as to exactly what goes there. They decided they're not going to build these 30-story skyscrapers, has been discussed or at least envisioned. Going to be smaller buildings, 12 stories at the most right now, at least that's the plan. But it's all part and parcel of trying to, again, redevelop the area just to the west of downtown. The question is, as this continues, and the area becomes more attractive, And as development presumably will push farther west at some point, what's going to happen to longtime residents of the area who already are being, some are concerned about what will happen to rents in the future and affordable housing. But I think that's going to take some time. We'll have to see what happens in East Franklinton first and then go from there.
When you say that market forces will drive the development, mm-hmm. that tells me that is there a component in there for affordable housing? Is the city asking them to do that? Is there
yes. Any- as part of the plan, I believe 20% of the of the 1,700 units that Buckingham will be involved in has to be affordable. So what does that mean? Workforce housing. So if I did my math correctly, again, 10% of the residential units have to be affordable to people of 80% of area median income, which would be roughly $41,000 for a single person and $59,000 for a family of four. So there is an affordable housing component to this overall development. Other cities have adopted inclusionary zoning where all developments have to include some sort of an affordable housing component. When we did a story on that last year, the city said that the market citywide really doesn't, we can't do that yet. But in Franklinton, as there's more demand for housing, and they're going to have to see how this goes, are they going to apply this to future development there? I guess we'll see.
There was a criticism or there's a question about whether or not they should be looking more at neighborhood to neighborhood and not citywide numbers.
Correct. I know that when they were figuring out affordability in Franklinton, and again, we did a story on that last year with the Casa development on the bank of the Scioto River
right.
that's being developed right now. And we talked to Rita Paris, who is the housing administrator for the city. And she was basically saying that the city is looking at East Franklinton as more of a downtown short north market. So at the time, that development, they were promising about 50 of the units would be workforce housing of the 230 units over there. But the incomes that they were using were based on the area overall. So that's a good question. Should as they develop these types of inclusionary housing policies, workforce housing policies, as development goes on, should they look at neighborhood to neighborhood incomes? That's hard to do, though, because the demand might be from outside the neighborhood. But you want to keep people inside the neighborhood, in the neighborhood, if they want to stay there.
Yeah.
And if they want to, you know, live in some of this new housing. So it's going to be difficult. But there has been that question. Yes.
The kind of impact that they're hoping to have, you've referred a couple times to the 400 Westridge Artist Colony,
correct.
Which is a really cool place. It's it's super neat. And one of the reasons why it's cool is because people can afford to get a studio there.
Correct.
And I'm wondering, what are those kinds of places planning? I mean, who owns that and who will control that?
Well, that's just it. In many cities, artist colonies have, you know, popped up in old warehouses,
yeah.
old industrial sites, because it's affordable. Because and sometimes people have lived there and they're not supposed to. There's a place actually in Old Town East that I recently wrote about too. It's a historical auto dealership that became a warehouse, and people were kind of living in loft-style apartments there.
Illegally.
And the city found a number of code violations, and they had to leave. Now they're trying to redevelop that site. In city by city, these areas become more popular. And again, at 400 West Rich, people aren't supposed to be living there either, but people, I think, stay there overnight from time to time. Are those types of places, as demand builds, going to become transformed into something else because the market demands that it happen?
Because look what happened to the short north.
Sure, exactly. And look what's happening in places like Marion Village and becoming much more popular and housing prices are going up and rents are going up. It's a tough thing that every city has to deal with. It's happening here now in Columbus, especially in the past few years, in specific areas of town. Again, like East Franklinton is going to be, or the Short North, or in Marion Village, or in places around Old Town East. And I think there's going to be some resistance in some neighborhoods and concerns about gentrification, even around the Poindexter Village area, where people fear that demand is going to force people out. And how is the city going to respond to that? And how are communities going to respond to that?
What's happening with Poindexter Village?
They are developing a number of mixed income apartments over there. There's already a senior center that's open, 104 units for low to moderate income seniors. There are people already living in the apartment units around there, have started to move in. They're still developing around there. They're hoping that other things will follow, like grocery stores and other retail, but they say that there needs to be more density there. There need to be more people living there. Having said that, a lot of people welcome the development. Some people, though, again, worry that it's going to reach a point where, with all the redevelopment in the area, as the area becomes more popular, and it's going to take a while. It's not going to happen overnight, but some people certainly fear that rents will go up, housing prices will go up, and some people won't be able to afford to live there anymore who have lived there for a long time.
I read an interesting article, and I can't remember, it might have been in one of your articles, but a woman made the point, this might have been in Linden, where they had the mixed, the housing development there. She said, well, she's got a spot there, and it's nice, but it's right up to what she can afford.
Right.
And she can't afford to save money to buy out and buy up and buy bigger because she's just making ends meet as it stands.
Correct. And that's what's going to happen in places.
It implicitly forces people out by eliminating their opportunity to save money and
correct
get ahead.
And their options.
Yeah.
And Franklinton for many, many years, obviously, the entirety of Franklinton has been affordable for a lot of people. We did a series of stories a few years ago, again, about landlords and code violations and horrible properties there. Having said that, there's also very good housing in Franklinton that's been affordable to a lot of people. So it gives them a place to live, close to work, close to bus lines. As development pushes farther west, what's going to happen to rents there? As people are willing to pay more and more. Again, we just did a story a few months ago about a doctor who has $1 million house in Franklinton now. So, developed an old warehouse type of situation. So those types of things, I think, are going to continue to happen. It's going to take some time, though. It's not going to be an overnight thing.
No, it is going to sneak up on on people, and it seemed to be that way with Short North. But do you have a sense that city officials are more aware of what the options are going forward, and they won't be caught off guard?
Oh, yeah, I think so. There's been some discussion about whether or not developers in the Short North need tax abatements anymore because there's just such a demand to develop in that area. I think the city certainly is aware of some of these issues. It's going to be it just depends on what's happening in individual neighborhoods. But again, as Columbus becomes more populated, as the area continues to grow in population overall, as there's more demand to live closer to the city, I think certainly policies are going to have to be developed if they want to maintain mixed income residents in certain neighborhoods.
Are the residents in Franklinton, are they organized? Are they talking to each other? Are they looking ahead?
I think to some extent, I know we did a story a couple of years ago about people who lived on certain streets where the city, if you remember, Mayor Coleman a number of years ago had the Home Again program where they redeveloped houses certainly in Franklinton, and there's a lot of demand for those houses because they've been redone. The rents in those houses, though, are pretty extravagant, where next door they may not be. I don't know that there's necessarily organization in Franklinton, but there certainly is an awareness of what's going on, and there's certainly a concern among some residents and even some landlords, certainly, about whether they can be able to keep the residents they have from moving out if they can't afford it.
We will continue our conversation about gentrification. We're sort of focusing on Franklinton right now. Later this year, an Indiana developer will break ground on 1,700 apartments, 150 hotel rooms, and nearly a million square feet of office and retail space. The development's supposed to take about 10 years, but that's probably means it's a good time to start thinking about what the city, what the residents want going forward. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513. We would especially like to hear from residents of Franklinton. What do you think about the proposed development? What are your concerns about your neighborhood going forward? You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. We're talking about the challenges of gentrification with a focus on the city's Franklinton neighborhood, where an Indiana developer is set to break ground on a 10-year project. It'll involve 1,700 apartments, 150 hotel rooms, and nearly a million square feet of office. Still with us is Columbus Dispatch reporter Mark Ferenczik. Joining us now by phone from Boston is head of the city and regional planning section at Ohio State's Knowlton School of Architecture, Rachel Cleet. Her research focuses on affordable housing policy and the social impacts of affordable housing. Welcome to the show, Professor Cleet.
Thank you. It's really nice to be here.
Also by phone, Development Director for the City of Columbus, Steve Shoney. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, Ann. Good morning.
Director Shoney, you've estimated the project will take up to 15 years to complete and require hundreds of millions of dollars in private investment. What's the city's interest in Franklinton and this development?
Well, the development on the Scioto Peninsula really gives us a couple opportunities. One is it's an opportunity to develop more job creation office space that creates jobs for residents and creates income tax revenue for the city. And it does give us the opportunity to find ways to bolster what's happening across the railroad tracks in Franklinton and make sure that this area is the transition between the Central Business District downtown and one of our neighborhoods that's seeing so much attention. And we're talking about it on things like All Sides with Ann Fisher. Hmm.
What are the big lessons that you've learned from other neighborhoods is moving forward with something like this to address the challenges of gentrification?
You know, that's a great question. We did, as you know, we did an incentive study last year that looked at our incentives, and we did a series of four listening sessions out in a variety of neighborhoods around the city, explaining the study, explaining what it found, and then listening to folks. And one of the things that I was struck by in the conversation is people really care about having mixed income neighborhoods, and they want to have neighborhoods where truly everyone feels welcome and like there is an opportunity for different types of folks to live in a neighborhood. And for me, whether we're talking about the peninsula or Franklinton or the Near East Side or the Hilltop or Linden or the South Side, whatever neighborhood you're talking about, it really is looking at it and saying, okay, where we have a neighborhood that was developed many years ago, is seeing new interest, how do we preserve the affordable housing that's there while bringing in more people, more income that then brings more private sector services?
What the project is going to receive a 15-year, 100% tax abatement upon completion. What strings are attached to that? What are you asking of the developer to help get you where you want to go when it comes to diversity and affordable housing?
Sure. One of the things that we're going to have in this development is some workforce affordable housing, call it middle-income housing, whatever term you want to use. Basically, what the developer will be doing is they'll be having 10% of the units will be affordable to folks making 80% of area median income. What does that mean in real people terms? That means about $40,000 a year for the household. And affordable to and rented to folks in that category. And then another 10% at 100% of AMI. So again, in round numbers, think $55,000 to $60,000 a year for the household.
You know, I'm thinking about that. And I'm also thinking about how you want people to be moving from one category of economic well-being to another, right? That's kind of the idea. How do you create affordable housing within, you know, when you're talking about 10% or 20% of this or that for workforce affordable housing? How do you also account for people moving on and moving up and also letting them be able to do that in place?
That's a interesting question. And, you know, at some level, you have to count on the private sector and the marketplace to determine that. And you have to be able to look at it and say, okay, as a city, we want to encourage different levels of product within a neighborhood. But also, you know, you really have to count on the private sector to develop some of that. There's only so much we can do from an incentive basis or a regulatory basis.
Professor Cleet, can gentrification be prevented? I mean, gentrification in and of itself isn't a negative thing per se. It means the neighborhood's been fixed up, but at the expense of long-term residents, long-term businesses.
So, yeah, you're right that gentrification in and of itself is actually something we want. We want neighborhood upgrading. What we don't want to see is a displacement of original residents. And there are lots of ways to retain them. I think one of the things we can do in terms of the kind of development that Steve Jenny was talking about, if you have a rental subsidy or you have a reduced rent in a particular apartment, you can actually float that. But if someone wants to stay in that apartment as their income increases, then you just move the subsidy to a different unit. Or the restriction to a different unit. So there are ways of handling that in a management way on the ground. It has to be watched and supervised, though. Now, in terms of, the major problem is that a lot of these neighborhoods already have a very active and very churning rental market. So people are moving all the time in those markets. And so it's not really clear when gentrification or when neighborhood upgrading happens whether people are moving, people in rental housing are moving any more than they did previously. They're just not able to find housing in that neighborhood. So it means that that neighborhood has to have, if you want to retain renters, there has to be a retention of some sort of housing that's affordable to those renters. And it may be that the renters who are in the neighborhood initially have incomes below that 80% of AMI or $40,000 a year. If they're really people who are at 30 or 40% of AMI, because those neighborhoods have housing that's available for folks who are very poor, but that housing is also very poor quality. So that requires particular kinds of subsidy investments and a decision on the part of the city about how much of that housing they're going to preserve in that area. And there's already some of that going in. I know the Housing Authority has some housing that they're developing there that has some rental housing with deep subsidies. So it's the question of looking at the entire neighborhood and thinking about the balance of all those kinds of housing that you want to have in it. For homeowners, the issue is usually property taxes that increase. And the tax abatement, I think, is on the development itself and not on the entire neighborhood.
Okay.
And so Steve certainly can correct me on that. And so that would mean for current property owners with incomes of a certain range, we might want to ensure that their property taxes don't go up for a certain amount of time if they've been living in the neighborhood for a certain number of years. And that would help to retain current homeowners in that neighborhood.
Mark Ferenczak?
Right. I know, and again, some other cities where there have been development pressures and development has increased, there are ways to keep property taxes from increasing at the same rate for long-time homeowners. Mm-hmm. So could that be applied in other areas of the city? We should ask Director Shoney about that.
Yeah, well, on the other hand, and also Director Shoney, you know, how do you do all of that, keep property taxes down without hurting schools and the entities that depend on them as well?
Thanks. Mark's point is something that we heard, and I think Rachel made the point too, is something that we actually heard in those listening sessions, was a lot of concern from homeowners about, as we're seeing a great real estate market from some perspectives happening in our community, we are seeing homeowners get squeezed with property taxes. For us at the city, that's not something that we believe legally we've got the ability to do. It's more of a county issue, and I know that's something that they're looking at, but it is a challenge. And it's, you know, this is the real estate markets for housing are incredibly complex systems, and it's the classic balloon analogy where you squeeze one place and something else pops out. And so we're always looking at, okay, how do we do things with the system to ensure that we can get to that Goldilocks place with a neighborhood where it's not too hot, it's not too cold, you've got the right mix of incomes and all those things. And it's a really complex set of problems.
Well, how do you plan? I mean, how do you work on that? Is that like something like the Mid-Ohio Regional Planning Commission or what? I mean, is it governments working together?
I think it's all of the above. I think it's having broader community conversations. I think it's having conversations like we're having today. So, you know, we're taking the first step at the city in terms of looking at our incentives policies. And you know, we think we're pretty close to coming out with our final recommendations on that. And, you know, we're going to take that and learn from that. And we're looking at what other cities around the country are doing. We're in a situation where, though our market is changing, if you compare Columbus to other markets around the country, we are still a really affordable market. And we've got the opportunity to see what's happening in other places and try and get ahead of some of these pressures or have things in place to deal with these pressures as they develop over the next 5 years. And that's the process we're going through. So, you know, we're going to start with how we deal with our incentive policy at the City of Columbus, and then we're going to go on to look at, are there other things we can do from a zoning perspective? And I guess the other thing I would point out is, you know, this isn't just a City of Columbus, the 226 square miles that are within our jurisdiction. This is a regional issue, and mm-hmm. this is something that, you know, isn't just something we're dealing with at the city, but all of our suburban neighbors are dealing with some of these same problems.
We have an email from Ben who asks, why is Columbus using out-of-state developers? Why not use Ohio developers? Doesn't Ohio mean jobs? I guess this city isn't using out-of-state developers. An out-of-state developer has invested in this property to develop it. But how does that work, Steve Shoney?
So we went through, for the Scioto Peninsula, we went through a, I guess it was probably 5 or 6 months competitive bid process where we did a national search. We had, I think, 7 groups submit interest through the Columbus Downtown Development Corp. We down selected to 3. 2 of those final 3 were local developers. And at the end of the day, we thought that Buckingham out of Indianapolis had the best proposal for the city. They had a great mix of uses and incomes, and we were most impressed with their proposal.
An email from Michael says downtown is filling up with condos that sell for prices starting at $300,000. Who is the market for these condos? Are there really that many people here who spend that much on housing? And Mark Ferencek, I know, you know, you've been covering this for 20 years now. Are you surprised at how it's turned out and where these people are coming from?
I think I'm surprised overall, not even with just the downtown market, but with all of the developments surrounding downtown and the prices that homeowners, condominium owners are getting for their homes. There's a demand for that. You know, I think it's probably just a combination of professionals. We have we did a series of stories last year, obviously, on income inequality. Mm-hmm. But there's a very high-end market here, too. So you have downtown professionals, younger people, people in government who want to live close to downtown, and they're getting those prices for those units. I guess it does surprise me that they're able to maintain that. Especially in recent years, that there are as many people as there are who can afford this. and afford some of these prices because, again, yeah, they're not inexpensive downtown in the areas around downtown. Certainly, you know, German Village, Victorian Village,
right.
The growing development in Italian Village. People are able to afford these prices, and development continues to happen because builders and developers know that they can get those prices. So it's going to continue to happen, and at least for the time being. And it'll be interesting to see if the market will stay that way as East Franklinton builds out the next 10 to 15 years.
Rachel Cleet, you know, Wineland Park is another neighborhood that has experienced a facelift. And I'm wondering, what's your observations about how that community has been changed and weathered the change?
So one of the interesting things about Wineland Park is if you compare how it looked 20 years ago to how it looks now, it looks like a pretty affluent neighborhood. Mm-hmm. The properties are in good shape. There's been a lot of redevelopment there. It looks completely gentrified. However, there has been a lot of local investment in housing there to improve housing. I believe that Community Properties of Ohio was created to purchase the federal subsidies for affordable housing that are still in that neighborhood. We just don't know. They're just not as visible as they were when they were on 11th Avenue. So during the time period where Wineland Park was redeveloped, there were very, very deliberate actions on the part of a collaborative of residents and funders and business community in the city to direct particular existing funds. So, for example, funds that Morpsey manages that are for weatherization and repair. There's money from the Columbus Foundation for that. So they had an overall housing strategy that brought a lot of diverse funds into that neighborhood to both retain homeowners, allow homeowners to fix up their homes, and live outside with grants and some loans when they could, but also to create affordable housing, affordable rental housing, and affordable home ownership opportunities. So now the market there has taken off, but those subsidies are still there. And some of them are permanent subsidies, or at least they're long-term federal subsidies. So when we look at a neighborhood like Wineland Park, people drive by and think, oh, all those people have been displaced. And the other thing that happens in a neighborhood when it improves is that people, maybe someone who owns a home can get a really good price when they sell that home. It allows them to sell their home and move somewhere else. People are not tied to these neighborhoods unless they want to be tied to these neighborhoods. So in some cases, gentrification allows people to sell a home and move to a different neighborhood they want to live in. So it's very understanding displacement is really complicated because of those because of the agency that people have. But I think Wineland Park is really a good example of how to retain affordable housing in a neighborhood. I think another example is what's going on the south side with new development for all people in Nationwide Children's Hospital.
Uh-huh.
And Nationwide Children's Hospital formed a partnership with Community Development for All People, and they've been developing housing. And I think right now they have maybe 15 or 20% of all the rental housing in that neighborhood is affordable, permanently affordable. And the question is, what do we do there on the homeownership front? So I think, you know, there's partnerships with community organizations that have either institutional partners that have a lot of resources that they can invest in affordable housing can really help to retain renters, affordable renters and homeowners in those neighborhoods.
Yeah, well, we have to say farewell to Steve Shoney, director of the Columbus Department of Development. Steve, thanks so much for joining us today. I appreciate it.
Oh, no problem. Thanks for having me on.
We'll continue our conversation looking at gentrification, the challenges of gentrification going forward in the city of Columbus, and, you know, with a specific focus on Franklinton, that neighborhood immediately west of downtown, just across the Scioto River. It's getting a makeover, and we're talking about that especially today. So people in Franklinton, what do you think? Residents, business owners, does this make sense to you? Do you have concerns? You want to share them? 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. Franklinton is getting a facelift. This year, an Indiana developer is set to break ground on 1,700 apartments, 150 hotel rooms, and nearly a million square feet of office and retail space in the neighborhood. We're talking about the impact it will have on the city and the neighborhood and what the challenges are to, you can't really avoid the gentrification, but to make it work for everybody. Still with us is Urban Issues and Columbus Neighborhoods reporter for the Columbus Dispatch, Mark Ferencek. Also with us, head of the City and Regional Planning Section at Ohio State's Knowlton School of Architecture, Rachel Kleach. She's on the phone with us from Boston. And also joining us now is Community Partnership Manager at Land Grant Brewing Company in Franklinton, Jackie Kemble. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
And listeners, are you from Franklinton? Call us and tell us how the new development will, you think it'll impact your community, what you worry about, what you're hoping for. 614-292-8513. Jackie, you work at Franklinton at Land Grant Brewing. How would you describe this current state of Franklinton? Land Grant's been there how long, and what do you make of it?
So Land Grant is a little over 3 years old, and we've kind of watched the neighborhood change around us as we've been there. When we moved into the building in 2014, it had been vacant for 15 years. It used to be the Capital Lift and Manufacturing Company. So it used to be an old elevator factory. And as we've been there, you know, we've kind of watched the neighborhood develop, not only in the industrial area that we're in, but more on the other side of 315 and what's being now referred to as West Franklinton, which is a largely residential area. So kind of watching Mount Carmel like expand and contract, and watching single family homes move in, and also affordable housing units, and also big developments. So we are definitely have our finger on the pulse of the neighborhood and are doing as much as we can to positively impact in our own capacity. But we're very excited to see how it's headed.
And yeah, you know, Mark Ferencek, we wanted to talk about Mount Carmel shutting down. They're going to demolish it.
Right. They are going to demolish the hospital itself as they move the inpatient care to the Grove City area. They are going to maintain the ER there. They're also going to maintain 4 parking garages there in the hopes that that will attract developers to that property. It's going to be green space, at least at the beginning. But I know there's discussions that they would like to attract other developers there, perhaps for affordable housing, perhaps for some other type of use. Columbus Landmarks Foundation has concerns about them demolishing the hospital, wondering why it can't be reused.
It looks beautiful from the outside.
Correct. I know it's hard to transform hospitals. It costs a lot of money to transform a hospital into another type of use, depending on how the building's laid out, the construction, the age, all that kind of stuff. But as development happens in Franklinton, I think the Mount Carmel people feel that there will be some development opportunities there in the future for something. And it just depends on what the market is looking for in that area. It's not too far from 315. It's not too far from East Franklinton and Land Grant. So there will be some, I think, interest there. It just remains to be seen as to what exactly, what kind of interest will be there.
Rachel Kleach, you know, the around Nationwide Children's, that's been a huge project. Obviously, Children's is a major anchor. Franklinton doesn't really have that right now. Of course, there's COSI, but it's not the same thing as a hospital. How important is an anchor like that? Say in the Short North with Italian Village and in Wineland Park, you've got the Short North area, again, another big anchor. What about Franklinton?
I think it's a great question. In the absence of a really strong department or office of housing at the city level that's really thinking about housing specifically across the entire area, you would need that kind of an anchor to really make sure investment is happening. Anchors are really important. Universities, hospitals are very, very important in terms of providing resources, because you need resources in order to do a redevelopment in a way that does not displace people. Mm-hmm. I think one of the things that I want to make sure we talk about is the link between what's happening downtown and what's happening in the neighborhood. Mm. In some cities, what they've done is they have development fees that are linked to development in other neighborhoods. So if someone, for example, wants to build a tall building and the building goes beyond the zoning, they can pay a fee into a housing fund or into some sort of development fund, and they can build higher. And then that money can be used to fund development projects that are affordable or whatever in other places in the city, to more evenly spread out the benefits of downtown development. And I think that we can think about also, in the absence of a large anchor, we can think about community benefit agreements. We can think about land trust methods of maintaining housing, shared equity housing, ways in which we can actually give the people who live in that neighborhood some ownership assets, some way of owning the assets in that neighborhood, whether it's cooperative ownership of financial or commercial areas, or if it's a cooperative housing. But I think there are lots of other ways of allowing for those benefits to accrue to people in the neighborhood that go beyond rental and ownership or individual investment in some sort of a project or a commercial venture.
Jackie Kemble, why did Land Grant build in Franklinton or locate in Franklinton? What was the attraction 3 years ago?
Well, I think that, one, the building fit our needs. It's very hard now in Columbus to find a manufacturing facility that has that kind of volume. Also, two of the owners, Adam Benner and Walt Keyes, they went to OSU. They love Columbus, and they decided a few years ago to move back from Chicago and Cincinnati, respectively. And they wanted their business to have a positive impact on the community that they landed in. And so they intentionally picked Franklinton because of its proximity to downtown and because they saw kind of far into the future, which we're seeing now, that the neighborhood was going to start getting more investment and development. And they wanted to kind of be in a place where they felt like they could fit into the neighborhood. We are very proud to be there, but we also are not living in a vacuum. We understand that Franklinton has quite a few, challenges for the people who have lived here for a really long time, absent of tons of resources available to their disposal, whether public or private. So what we try to do is invest in long-term community sustainability by supporting institutions that have been there for a really long time. So we work with the Gladden Community House, which has been there since, I think, 1905.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think there's anything that they don't do. They run a 5-star after-school program. They run a food bank. They do all sorts of things for the community. So we decided culturally as a company to make the decision that we wanted to have a positive impact, and we thought that Franklinton would be a good place to do that.
Hmm. It's like there's a new generation of people coming in and having a the idea of a positive development, Mark Fearnchick.
Right.
That's something kind of different.
Right. And Land Grant's a good example of that. There are other places around there as well, like the Rehab Tavern, for example. Mm-hmm. And again, there's a demand to be there. And as people visit places like Land Grant and some of the other eateries and bars over there, as well as businesses, they get familiar with the area, they feel comfortable with the area, and they say, this is close to downtown, maybe I'd like to live around here someday. And that's what developers are counting on, is people become familiarized with areas that they haven't been to in past years, that they'll see how close that is to downtown. They might want to live there if they work downtown, and they just kind of like the vibe of the area. But again, it's like she was saying, there still are a lot of challenges in Franklinton in terms of blight and some crime issues and just a lot of the problems that the areas had to deal with from time to time. So it's going to be, again, a slow process. It's not going to happen overnight, but companies are willing to sink a lot of money taking a chance on it, figuring that this is going to be a place to be, again, as Columbus continues to grow.
See, Caddy in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, you're on the air. Welcome.
Is that me?
That's you.
Okay. I have several thoughts. One is, frustrating to me that slum landlords are not held accountable and neighborhoods go into disrepair. Secondly, I'm really concerned about the quality of living, not the quantity. And I think so often developers, especially if they're coming in from out of town, they don't know the area, are interested in putting up structures and making money and not looking at the overall environment and community that they're going into. Mm-hmm. I wish I could remember there was a very creative housing development set up that had close residential housing that was within walking distances of libraries and markets and resources, and encouraged and had green space and encouraged an integrated community versus just another high rise and overpriced housing downtown. Not all of us do want to live in rural communities, and Franklinton has a close network of people. Just because folks are poor doesn't mean that they don't actually have more sense of community, I think, than some of the more affluent neighborhoods.
Okay. Kathy, thanks for that call. I appreciate it. You know, Rachel Cleet, professor at Ohio State University, head of the city and regional planning department there. Are we getting better at all of this?
We're getting better. It's a wonderful question. I think that it, I think that we know what to do. And the we, I guess my question for you, Anne, is who's the we?
Yeah.
Is Columbus getting better at this? I don't know. I think Columbus is starting to learn from other places about how to do development so that we will create a region that has equity across all its neighborhoods and doesn't have income segregation in the same way. So these are all these small battles are part of a larger context in the entire region, as Steve Strange was saying earlier. So I think they require, though, actors at the bottom, meaning community-level actors, say a nonprofit community development corporation, as well as actors at the city level and at the county and at the state, to be able to work collaboratively to be able to produce these kinds of efforts. So if you think about what's going on, what happened in Wendland Park or what's going on right now on the south side, those are networks of relationships of people and communities working together with resources of some sort. And I think there are other community organizations like the Franklinton Urban Empowerment Lab. They just renamed it, which is the new name for the Franklinton Community Development Corporation, is thinking about a lot of these things from the current neighborhood's perspective. They're really thinking about development and economic development within the neighborhood. So I think we have the potential to get better at this, and we know what to do, but we have to actually focus on it and give resources to it.
And Jackie Kemble, Land Grant Brewing, it wants to stay there. Does it want to grow? I mean, how do you see the future for Land Grant in Franklinton at this point?
I mean, land, are you talking about physical expansion?
Yeah.
You know, I think that we are pretty happy where we are right now.
Uh-huh.
I couldn't tell you what the future holds for us, but we definitely eventually want to expand, but we want to do it sustainably and in a way that supports the neighborhood as well. We are not, if your question is if we're trying to get more parcels of land or to go up or anything like that, not currently.
Uh-huh.
The market itself is going to take a little bit more exploring. And as you well know, it fluctuates day to day in Franklinton.
Right. Mark Ferenchik, last word. I mean, what are your expectations after all the years you've been covering this? I don't know if you're going to be around in 10 years to cover when this is all done, this development, but what do you think?
I think it's going to happen. I mean, it may look different in 10 years than what they're envisioning now. Again, I think market forces certainly play a large role in that. But I think that eastern part of Franklinton is going to be so visually different, and it's going to be very interesting to see what it looks like, what kind of neighborhood is going to develop there, what kind of community will develop there. And if that is going to, again, translate into further development west, and what will happen to the more populated areas of Franklinton. And again, will the city, developers, residents be able to retain that mixed income that a lot of communities want?
We are out of time. A lot more conversation to be had on this, to be sure. But for now, I have to say thanks to Rachel Cleet, professor and head of the City and Regional Planning Department at Ohio State University's Knowlton School of Architecture. Thanks so much for joining us.
My pleasure. Thank you.
And be safe in Boston.
Thank you. I'm staying here.
All right. And also Jackie Kemble. She's Community Partnership Manager for Land Grant Brewing Company in Franklinton. Thanks for joining us today.
Of course. Thanks for having me.
And Mark Ferencik, Urban Issues and Columbus Neighborhoods Reporter for the Columbus Dispatch. Thanks for sharing your insights. I appreciate it.
Thanks.
Thanks for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.